All right. Celestial CFT recasts 4D scattering amplitudes as 2D conformal correlators. The ultimate distant goal is to construct a holographic dual for flat space quantum gravity. But in the last five plus years, we've already made some remarkable connections. Most of the progress so far has been converting things we know about 4D amplitudes to 2D language, but we certainly hope to flesh out the connection more and then use the highly developed tools of 2D CFT to learn about 4D amplitudes. And fairly recently, we've started on that to some extent with these holographic symmetry algebras of soft particles in celestial CFT. Right. So I'll review celestial CFT briefly, but just starting at the absolute basics and then making a beeline for the tools I'll need later. Right. So dualities are often first guessed just by matching up symmetries of two different theories, and that's a good place to start for celestial CFT. Scattering amplitudes in four dimensions, they have Lorentz symmetry, which is a special orthogonal group, and that's isomorphic to SL2C, which is the one of the common ways to present the two-dimensional conformal group. And more generally, in arbitrary dimension and signature, if you have SOP plus 1, Q plus 1, then that's isomorphic to the conformal group on flat space of signature PQ. Just from this observation about the mathematical symmetry groups, it already strongly suggests it should be possible to draw out some similarities between 4D scattering amplitudes and 2D conformal field theory. It's very helpful to make this more manifest, but by using certain parameterizations of the momenta. So, for example, if you have a massless momentum, P mu, you can write it with some overall frequency factor, and then parameterize the angles with stereographic coordinates on the sphere. And then when you do a Lorentz transformation to this momentum, the z coordinates transform by a Mobius transformation from SL2C or PSL2C rather. Right. So we can take an amplitude, which is labeled by the momenta of the external particles, and then just choosing to parameterize it with these omega z z bar variables that already goes part of the way towards helping us see a duality. Because when you do a Lorentz transformation to this amplitude, the z dependence transforms just like conformal correlators. So we often suggestively write we often define this notation here to just mean the amplitude with these parameters. But it's a conceptual shift. Yeah, we think of the amplitude as a correlator with some operators being inserted at the places on the sphere corresponding to the directions that the legs are coming in for the amplitude. But this object doesn't transform exactly like a 2D correlator. Because the omegas also transform. You know, if you boost in a certain direction, it'll give a certain factor for that omega. And generically, they change as well. But that's actually not a huge problem. It just amounts to having a transformation law that's like working with 2D operators that are not diagonalizing dilations. But for most purposes, you still can think of them as local 2D operators. But we can just do a change of basis. And then for massless particles, that change of basis is just a Mellin transform. So we can define A tilde to be just the Mellin transform. Yeah, we just take the amplitude and we Mellin transform with respect to the frequencies. So those are now dummy variables. They're gone, and instead we have these delta parameters, which will serve as conformal dimensions. And then we would write that as we would write the correlator like this, and now it's parameterized by two angles and one conformal dimension, and this object does transform just truly exactly like a 2D conformal correlator with respect to the global conformal group. Okay, yeah. So we've established what I mean by celestial correlators, or celestial amplitudes, and now let's move on to reviewing some properties. The collinear limit of amplitudes turns out to be one of our main tools. When you have some amplitude and you have some diagram contributing to it like this, so endpoint amplitude, and I've got a diagram of particles 1 and 2 interact, and then some other arbitrary tree level process happens. Then when we take particles 1 and 2, the massless particles, to be collinear, then this internal propagator goes on shell. And then whenever you have some internal propagator going on shell, you can factorize the amplitude into a product of lower point amplitudes. So when 1 and 2 become collinear, this is going on shell because pi squared is going to 0. And let's write that out explicitly within our parameterization for the momentum there. Okay. So when our two particles, 1 and 2, move to the same direction, then Z12 is going to 0. So we can see from this expression, and is this hidden from any of you by the lectern? We can see that when the particles become collinear, their angles come together, then we get a pole in Z. For the rest of the talk, I'm just going to specialize to the case of analytically continuing Z and Z bar separately rather than being complex conjugate. So for our purposes, this is just a simple pole in Z. Okay. Right, so when we take two massless particles collinear, this is just in a usual momentum space amplitude, then you get something that has this pole, and then you also multiply by the three-point amplitude for whatever the intermediate particle is being the third leg. When you take that expression in Mellin transform and massage it appropriately, you end up with the celestial OPE, which for Yang Mills, I'll write it down explicitly. This is one of the equations I was hoping to have written down before I started. Let's see. So we've got one positive helicity gluon, and we've got another positive helicity gluon. And then the 1 over z part of it is given by this. We've got the structure constant, which takes care of the color. We've got this Euler beta function, which ubiquitously shows up in these celestial OPEs. And then we've got some terms that are basically coming from a Taylor expansion at some intermediate step within the massaging that you need to do to get here. So we had particles 1 and 2. Whenever you do an OPE, you have to choose to center around some point. The way I've written it, it's centered around z2. And then we're taking z1 close to z2. We get this pull term. And then we can write this exact expression for the rest of the behavior. And we've got this Euler beta function, which is defined in terms of gamma functions. It has poles and zeros at certain integer values of the arguments, which become important. And then we've got this just a single primary here, delta 1 plus delta 2 minus 1. And then we've got derivatives of it, which correspond to the SL2C descendants of it, the global descendants of that conformal primary. Right, great. One of the other main tools that we use in celestial CFT is taking particles soft and the associated soft theorems. So when I write O of omega z bar, this is supposed to represent just some particle within some arbitrary amplitude, and then we just focus on the dependence of that amplitude of the parameters for this one particle. You might think of it as O within some arbitrary correlator. And it's a function of omega. We're free to do a Laurent expansion in that variable. The leading divergence always turns out to be 1 over omega, and then you've got the order 1 and the order omega and so on terms from there. And then it's going to be useful later to define define an operator, this soft operator S K, which grabs the 1 over omega K term from the series expansion in omega. Yeah, for now we're just thinking about taking one particle soft, but later we'll be taking multiple. We need to keep track. So the leading term omega k equals 1 is always governed by the familiar universal soft theorems. Depending on the particle type, there are also subleading soft theorems. So the order one term might also have some universal behavior, but in all cases it stops at some point. You only have so many universal soft theorems. But we can still consider doing this soft expansion, just a series expansion around zero frequency. And it turns out that these infinite terms, they're not all universal, but they are all quasi-universal. And we can see that behavior, or it was first noticed, really, within this celestial CFT context.
When you say quasi-universal, is it somehow you're saying that like moving Coulombian behavior is
yes.
Universal?
Yeah.
Is that actually true beyond tree level, like Eric?
Oh, I haven't thought about it beyond tree level, but lots of the soft theorems they only hold at tree level too. So this is a subset of what you.
No, the
gravitons you have some loop control, yeah. Like leading is exact, subleading is one loop exact, but for gluons and photons the tree one still gets loop corrections. But. When I write it this way, these are the parameters of the momentum, so we're in momentum space, but you could also think about the Mellin transformed version, and you might ask, how can I extract the soft behavior from the Mellin space presentation of these things? And it turns out that there's a math theorem that relates the series coefficients and expansion of frequency to the residues at integer conformal dimensions for the Mellin conjugate variable delta. So I've defined these OKs just in terms of the series expansion from momentum space, but they actually land you on objects that are also natural from the Mellin space perspective. These two different pictures sort of converge once you start taking things soft, where K is one of these whole numbers. Once we have one of these OKs, we can also do a series expansion in Z bar, and then we'll get And once we do the Z bar expansion, then the coefficients there, the only argument is Z, so it's supposed to be holomorphic then. It pretty much is, and that's good enough to write down some current algebras, it turns out, but there are subtle problems with that, which are the topic of the rest of this talk. I should also mention when you want to think of this object like a current, and then you want to see how it acts on other things, you do a little contour integral around some other insertion, and since it's a little contour integral, it's close by, which means you can use the collinear limit to compute it. To derive the specific current algebra structure that these objects have, you use the soft collinear limit. Both of these at once. Okay. So just to give a little recap. Side by side. usual amplitudes have Lorentz symmetry. We recast that as the global conformal group. Usual amplitudes have usual amplitudes have a universal collinear limit, and we recast that as the singular part of the OPE. And for usual amplitudes, you can do soft expansions. And those give you holomorphic currents, pretty much. OK, do we have any questions here?
Are you worried about whether these derivations make sense, for the NHG and KHG amplitudes? I don't know. For instance, you only capture the leading holomorphic colonies in your own data.
I'm specializing to just looking at holomorphic collinear limits, but as far as helicity, I haven't even specified helicity yet.
Sure.
The statements here can work for either. Right. So let's.
But for instance, if you have enough of a negative temporal dimension, then you have both finite dimensional left and right multiplets, right? So nominally you need singularities and the operators there, which would kind of make the expansion.
When you have both Z and Z bar singularities, you probably need to be careful about which one you're taking first. But if I'm just taking the Z ones, then it's probably fine. Okay, so that concludes the little review of CCFT, and now let's set the context for my paper, which I guess I've already given a few bits away. So these soft modes have OPEs resembling a current algebra. Which was shown in a paper from just a couple years ago. Specifically for positive helicity gravitons in just pure Einstein gravity, or actually for any minimally coupled gravity. The current algebra turns out to be a W1 plus infinity wedge current algebra. This symmetry group has shown up in the past in various 2D models, and also going back to Penrose's work for classical gravity itself. So it was pretty exciting to see it show up in this context. It suggests that we're. That we are talking about something physical here for this obscure symmetry algebra we're peeking at. This was shown in a paper by Strominger that quickly followed up that other one. But there was another paper later that year that showed that when you try this same construction for generic EFTs, then And then you try to interpret these OPEs as describing a current algebra, it gives you an algebra that fails the Jacobi identity. Yeah. Like current algebras within any genuine local 2D CFT, it has to satisfy Jacobi just because of counterpolling.
Okay, like, but now the problem is not what these guys are all dimensional reduction of a Carolean theory, right? So.
Oh. It's interesting to consider the Carolean perspective, but it's got the degenerate direction. So should that necessarily lead to non-locality in the sphere directions?
So that's a question. So I don't know about that. So what I would say is. Okay, say I have a 4D CFT, and maybe this isn't the right starting point, because one later on have that. Then I have OPE in 4D. I can take all my operators from the surface. I still have now 3D primaries on the surface. And then, basically, if that surface is null instead of a normal 3D CFT, it's a Carolean CFT. If I do the dimensional reduction, I have a celestial primary. So the only subtlety about like operators should come down to that light-like direction, I think, or like the fact that we're dimensionally reducing, we're smearing light-like directions. Mm-hmm. In the celestial OPE, you're never actually in the same points. So you're all spacelike separated until you're living in the generator. And so I would have thought that basically just like, we'll define this as the OPE in 4D near the boundary. In a 3D ring, for instance, it should tell me that I should be able to build up all the multi-critical guys and then not have a problem with anything except there is soft and collinear on that issue.
Mm-hmm. You've got the locality for the bulk OPE, and then you can probably in principle derive these boundary properties from that by bringing it to the boundary. But it's puzzling from that perspective. The logic I used for this wasn't passing through any limit to a boundary Carolean reduction thing. It was just I'm taking amplitudes. And then I know some properties of them, and I can rewrite, and then you end up reading off certain properties. But the obstruction ends up coming from three particle factorization channels.
Good. And so, can you interpret the difference of the particle operators? Because in the context there, basically, you know the full spectrum of the mean field theory, right? I know all of the operators, and now I also know the full spectrum of all the primaries and three dimensions, and the radius and the celestial spectrum.
So there, I should be able to tell you that you're missing all the particle operators.
But the fact that the obstruction ultimately comes from a three particle factorization channel, that does seem related to trying to push that perspective.
When you say generic EFT, you mean non gauge?
Rather than pure Yang Mills, you could consider adding some F cubed term, and then if you do this construction, you get something that looks like a current algebra but fails Jacobi, and then analogously for gravity, if you did pure Einstein, it satisfies Jacobi, but if you add an R cubed term, then it fails it. I'm splitting hairs here. When I say fails Jacobi, what I really mean is that if you take a certain combination of consecutive residues that and then you try to interpret that like commutators, you would get something that fails Jacobi. So let me write down explicitly the condition I'm talking about, which is another equation that I was hoping I would write down before the talk started. So let's see. But it's going to go up top. I'm never going to erase this one.
Okay, make sure I can read all the indices. Indices here, 2, 3, 1, 2. Just...
Yes. This is 2 to 3 after 1 to 2, 1 to 3 after 2 to 3, and 2 to 3 after 1 to 3. This has a natural picture that goes along with it that if I think about the Z1 complex plane, and I have a contour encircling both Z2 and Z3, then this contour is related to, like, if I wanted to take the commutator between operators 2 and 3 first and then act on them with operator 1, whereas if I take the contour of Z1 around them separately, then that's giving you the sum of acting on them individually with operator 1. We're familiar from 2D CFT that you can just pull the contour for these holomorphic dependents and then pinch it off here and then shrink these down, and these have to be the same. But that turns out to fail sometimes for this double residue condition here when acting on soft amplitudes. You can also ask. So now that it's written in terms of this, mechanical way, rather than conceptually talking about current algebras, I just have some statement of complex analysis for some function of complex variables. We can ask, well, what if I did this same sequence of residues for hard celestial amplitudes rather than soft ones? And we can also ask, what if I did the same residues for hard momentum space amplitudes? And it turns out that when one of these is zero, then they're all zero. So it was unclear for a while what the relationship was between them. Turns out it's very simple, so that's nice. But it's interesting that these three ways to package the information from our amplitudes, they all have slightly different analytic properties, and the specific reason that it fails takes different manifestations for each one. But in all cases, it's really coming from three particle factorization channels. So from the hard momentum perspective, we haven't taken any limits yet, and it's already present there. It's kind of a matter of it's contextual of whether you say which limit is at fault, but I will say that when you go to a high enough soft order that it's beyond the universal cases, then from the representation theory side, you expect that the representation has null states and could be consistently quotiented. But if you just look at the amplitude, the null thing is not actually zero. It's simpler, but it's not zero. These obstructions to Jacobi, they're completely distinct from the fact that the null part is not zero.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you another question. So instead of going from celestial basis to omega from the Mellon transform, go to a Fourier transform into the position space.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm shooting the basic degree, taking three operators that I subscribe,
mm-hmm.
and taking one of those with some finite separation. And so the subtlety has to come from the cross of each other's like now like dinner, like what is that?
So the Fourier transforming omega to Bondi time perspective is maybe missing from my list there, I guess.
Yeah, but that would be cool because then you're seeing something where literally the computation relations of that function.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it's consistent, but that would be interesting and probably useful to understand it from that perspective as well.
Especially because I think that would be the fact that the sub multiplets really aren't the non truncated is another term there. It's like zero with other operators. Now there's not other operators. I don't like. Versus if it's true for finite omega, it's just a linear message. You should be able to easily just reach it synchronously. That's more.
Can I ask a question, sir? Mm-hmm. On the top line, do you have a bound on how negative K1, K2, K3 would be?
No.
So this is not really solved?
But you're going to have to call your moments in you around.
But moments in you, so if it's too much, it's not solved.
Literally the same way you want to say it's every picture.
Yeah, when you have small omega, the leading term is 1 over omega, but you can ask about these other ones too. You can project onto them with omega derivatives and then take omega to 0.
You didn't put the bound. This is for
But I think it is special to really say that just because there are primaries that sentence that those guys are like contact terms, that's not trivial. So there's an extra step there where all of these modes now have like finite dimensional multiple.
Okay, so we're 2/3 through on time now, but we finally set up the context for my actual paper. And then the plan for the rest of the talk is just to show the equivalence between statements 1, 2, 3, and 4 there. I've got stuff I could say for another hour, but since I've set up the talk this way, then I can just go a little faster on the equivalent steps. Okay. So. Okay. So. Going from 2 to 3 is very quick, actually, because we're taking residues on z's, like zi go to zj, and we're also looking at Mellon transforms on omega I, and these are in different variables, so you might expect that it doesn't cause any problems, without committing to saying they commute exactly, the original paper that derived the celestial OPE, I confirmed that they do commute at least at leading order, which is the only thing that matters here for taking these residues. So we can just piggyback on them and say that 2 is the same as 3, just because at leading order, Mellon transforms commute with residues. And then,
Are you assuming anything about the analytic behavior of the amplitudes to do this?
Yes. I'm using different pieces to do different parts, but as a general statement, I make heavy use of the fact that tree amplitudes are rational functions of the parameters describing the momentum components.
So this argument isn't going to work. If I wanted to study the analogous thing in a world loop, this kind of equivalence, your argument isn't going to work.
Right. Yeah, except for in very special theories where the loops are still rational. Yeah. Okay, so next let's work on connecting 3 and 4. So 3 and 4, those are both just statements about hard momentum space amplitude. So usual momentum space, we haven't even taken anything soft. But I am parameterizing with omega, z, and z bar. All right, so let's choose three massless particles, 1, 2, and 3, within some momentum space amplitude. Let's use that parameterization that I mentioned before, where the z and z bars play nicely with SL2C. And we view the amplitude as a function of omega 1, z1, z bar 1, and 2, and 3. And you have to worry about momentum conservation, but it's possible to make that precise without losing the fact that it's a rational function. Right. You're only going to get poles from internal propagators going on shell. So we've got an amplitude, a tree-level amplitude. We can describe it as a sum of diagrams, and which individual diagrams can contribute to that double residue condition there. For each term, we're taking two residues. So it's not enough just to have one going to two, one coupling to two within the diagram, because that's only going to give one pole. We need two poles, and we can only get that by having one coupled to two, and then that leg also connect with three. And then now when one is close to two, we'll get a pull from this internal propagator, and when three is close to one and two, then we'll get a pull here. So diagrams like this can contribute. These diagrams individually will contribute to the double residue condition. It's possible that they'll all cancel. But other diagrams will just straight up individually not contribute to the double residue condition. So we only need to worry about diagrams like this. And these diagrams, they all share this propagator here, which is P1 plus P2 plus P3. Right, and we can write this out in terms of our parameters. We can write that propagator out in terms of our parameters. And if you view it as a function of z1, then there is a pole at some z1. So let's call that z star. There is a pole at some z1 equals z star from this propagator, but z star is not z2, it's not z3, it's not any other zi. So in that sense, it's non-local. We're working in momentum space, so at the moment we shouldn't be making totally direct comparisons to 2D CFT, but just at the level of, we're talking about functions of complex variables and their residues. This is different from contexts where you would be able to apply the contour pulling argument. Because if we have z1 and z2 and some contour around them, then that contour might also include z star. And if you try to pinch down to relate this to contours around z1 plus a contour around z2, it's not going to be the same. It's going to differ by the contour around z star. That gives some intuition for why these diagrams do obstruct it, obstruct this double residue condition from the complex analysis perspective. Because these diagrams all share this common factor of 1 over p1 plus 2 plus 3 squared, then you can actually rewrite this whole double residue condition to something much more compact. Double residue equals that double residue condition for the hard momentum case can be rewritten just as this residue of z2 going to z3 of residue of z1 going to z star of the momentum space amplitude. This first residue here, z1 going to z star, well, that's just grabbing, you can write that directly in terms of the three particle factorization channel. And then you end up with some four-point amplitude with some intermediate particle I, and then the residue of that propagator, and then the rest of the amplitude. Does that make sense?
This
first residue just reduces to a four-point amplitude with some intermediate particle times stuff that we don't have to care about from now on, because it's not going to have any more poles. So then to get this full thing, we have to take the residue as z2 goes to z3 of this this expression here, but the z2 to z3 residue is only going to be sensitive to this four-point amplitude here. Right. So if this residue vanishes for all possible intermediate particles I, then the whole thing has to vanish, and you can show pretty directly that if one of these is non-zero, then you can use CPT conjugates to construct a six-point amplitude that overall has non-zero double residue condition. The double residue condition vanishes if and only if all of these vanish.
What surface do you think should be in any work?
The total absence of three particle factorization is sufficient, but not necessary. It's just the residue of it has to vanish. And another question here.
How would it be kind of similar if inside of your ball, you had a little ball
here? A form factor? Right.
Would the condition then be kind of the same?
Right. I think it would be substantially similar.
The question was, what's the analog when we're studying form patterns instead of amplitudes?
And I would say it should be the same if you think of being able to repair the state that's the other particles with the form
factor. And then you're looking at I think a lot of it would carry over. So the double residue condition can be reduced to the statement about these 1, 2, 3 with any other intermediate vanishing, but specifically this residue. And this residue of it is not so obscure. Like it feels kind of coordinate dependent. We chose a very particular parameterization here, but actually Z1 is already gone because we took a residue on it, and we never introduced Zi. So the only Zs that this thing depends on are Z2 and Z3. Let's convert it to spinner helicity. So the one over Z2 3 part is going to be the same as whatever the one over angle bracket 2 3 part is, and you know, changing the way you parameterize it, your momenta, or if you use momentum conservation substitutions to change the way you write it in terms of spinner helicity, then it can change it a lot. It can make it unrecognizable, but it can't change the angle bracket weight. Where I mean by angle bracket weight, take some expression written with spinner helicity variables, and then take the number of powers of angle brackets in the numerator and subtract the number of powers of angle brackets within the denominator. And if you just write your amplitude down in spinner helicity, count that off, then you can see which term is obstructing Jacobi, just as simple as that.
So what you think, so you're saying
Yes. So you can use little group scaling to rewrite this statement as one about like the dimension of the operator,
yeah,
or dimension of the amplitude.
Yeah. Okay. So, and what's this?
Well, this residue here is picking out the three particle factorization channel. And then the only piece we care about from that is this 4-point amplitude,
okay,
and then we take a residue of that 4-point amplitude.
Okay. So you need the 4-point amplitude when I take two less linear to vanish.
When it's written this way, then I suppose yes, Z2 to Z3 does mean two of the legs are becoming collinear. But actually hadn't been thinking of it that way. I was just thinking in terms of literally taking a residue of a function, which I think you have to be careful about when you're taking things collinear or soft and really low point amplitudes, like a 4-point amplitude, because the momentum conservation makes things very non-generic with the dependence on the parameters.
Sorry, I guess I'm trying to realize this because there's other momentum. Yeah, so the momentum is concerned is still all masses on shell, but it's complexified now probably for this, or the
meter, like it's going to be not real, right? Just a quick question. Angle bracket, you mean the angle bracket weight of 2 3? You mean the power of 2 3 to some power?
Right. So if I had like 1 3 squared over 2 3, then this would have angle bracket weight plus 1. Is what I mean by angle bracket weight.
Okay. So can we rephrase it that way?
Plus 1. And you're saying it has to be minor plus 1 to be.
So if
this angle bracket weight is 3, then there's a residue. It has to be negative necessarily.
When you take your amplitude, write it in spinner helicity, generally you can have terms of different angle bracket weight. And the only term that matters for our purposes is the term with angle bracket weight minus 1.
Oh, that's what you mean. Okay.
Is there any chance
that
can be phrased in terms of cross-exponentiary of that, right?
Here I've written a specific diagram, but yeah, this is our statement about the amplitude, so you would have to sum ST and U or whatever.
But the amplitude is either one amplitude was a celestial plot, then it would kind of be like, sorry, if that 4-point amplitude could be written as a 4-point celestial correlator, and you know
Yeah. It, yeah, I'm sure, related, I'm sure.
So I'm really looking for this condition because, like, the Park Taylor amplitude, 5 points,
mm-hmm.
4 points have 3 minus 1.
Mm-hmm.
So, so what would that final condition
be? Did you say 5 points has weight minus one?
No, that's right. I suppose it's fourth power on the top and n plus 1 on the bottom. So it's weight is minus n plus 4 points.
Right.
Yeah.
So, for 4 point, it has weight 0.
Sorry, it's what?
Let's go. Yeah.
And so you count, okay, just the equation here. Because if I take 2 to 3, it looks like I still have a singularity. You're saying it's compensated by
three
weights distribution.
If you take 2 to 3, like this?
Here, you're saying, okay, it's weight plus 1. So it's not singular, 1%. The 1/3 squared divided by 2/3 squared.
Oh.
Your example.
Oh.
It's singular when I did 2/3, so I'm just confused.
Right. So, people often write expressions in spinor helicity that are not actually like pared down to a minimal coordinate system.
So this
would actually depend. Yeah.
Okay. So when is it plus 1 for K1, K2, K3? What are the conditions on this?
Right. There's a lot more to say there, but I'll just say it in words, I guess. Right, so I did 3 to 4. Okay, but we finished showing the equivalence of 3 and 4. The last step is to show the equivalence of 1 with 3. I found it most convenient to go from hard momentum to soft rather than from celestial to soft, because hard momentum is rational and you can just take a Laurent expansion to get soft. So this expression here is not actually well defined because the order of limits don't commute. Soft doesn't commute. Specifically because of those null parts beyond where the representation theory makes you want to truncate your representation, those end up being non-zero polynomials. Like there's no poles from that term, but there are non-zero polynomials in general, and the coefficient of that term depends on the order in which you take things soft. That was interesting to work that out, but it turns out that's not the culprit for the Jacobi obstruction.
Can you repeat what you're saying? The one which has zero in the naive limit, you're saying the... Okay.
Yeah, that...
Non-polynomial, okay, yeah.
When
you take the soft limit somehow, this infinite sum here truncates?
And then there's another...
You're talking about the terms that are sent to zero, right?
Yes. So if I have two insertions, and then I first take them collinear, and then I take centered collinear centered around particle 2, and then I take particle 1 soft, then the series truncates.
Yes.
Nicely, in accordance with representation theory, but if I took OPE or the collinear limit centered around particle 2, and then I took particle 2 soft first, then it doesn't truncate. And you can actually consider like finite relative rates of conformal softness. Like you approach the poles in Mellin space simultaneously with some definite relative rate. And then the coefficient for this extra part depends continuously on the relative rate. It's present for even both particles being positive velocity. You still have this ambiguity from soft limits, which is not consistent with them being local operators. But that turns out not to be the culprit for this story. The culprit for this story is the non-commutativity of soft and collinear limits. People have dealt with this expression in the literature, and that they implicitly defined it by using some soft OPE to evaluate this residue with the soft particles, and then using a different soft OPE to evaluate the next residue with whatever that they wanted. When you take that, like, that is a well-defined prescription. If you write it out in terms of limits, it's like soft and then collinear and then soft and then collinear. When you do that, treating like particle one and two symmetrically, you end up with a non-zero, like this extra null part, which is not that great. You could try setting that to zero by hand, but first of all, doing things by hand is not that great, and second of all, that's asymmetric between particle one and two when you try to set the extra part to zero by hand. So those are basically the two approaches that have been used in the literature so far. We also might consider. Let me also say, but before you lose this train of thought, when you do the ad hoc thing and set that null part to zero by hand, you get constraints that are exactly the same as two and three up there. One other thing, the thing that initially seemed most natural to me was to do the soft limits first and then take the residues. And then when you do it that way, when you take these soft limits, you're just doing Laurent expansions in a given order. It's still rational. And then you can still do contour pulling, and it has to vanish always, which is kind of exciting. But then when you ask, what current algebra does that describe? The answer is that, like, if you try to interpret something as the commutator between particles two and three, it depends on what particle one is doing over here. So it seems like that there's not really a local current algebra interpretation if you do it that way. You can also consider defining this by doing the soft limits last, the residues first, and then the soft limits. So for that case, you're just taking soft limits of the hard momentum space condition. So it's obvious that it's implied one way. It turns out it's also implied the other way, because if you have a non-zero function and you take Laurent coefficients, you're going to find at least one non-zero Laurent coefficient. But it's still kind of weird to do it that way, because you say, okay, let's do the soft limits last. You still have to choose an order of soft limits, which is not very satisfying to me, because these are ostensibly particles that are all on the same footing. Like, we initially just said these are three soft particles, but then it turns out you need to choose some order. So my personal favorite is to rather than talking about the Jacobi identity for three soft particles, talk about the action of two soft particles on some hard particle. And then rather than the Jacobi identity, it's just the equivariance of the representation acting on that particle. And then it turns out that the ambiguity between taking one soft versus two soft first, it actually drops out automatically.
Yeah, I guess, from you think that these soft limits are like, you know, soft charges, which are part of, in the Fock space, like symmetry charges, then that's mm-hmm. what makes sense. Like you have the charge acting on your space, and then you want to know whether it forms a representation.
Right, but if you have the Carolian perspective, I think it would make more sense to look at
the... There's the Carolian perspective.
No, it's not I think that collinear, like if I wanted to set up an OPE of a null manifold, like OPE and how we consider it.
That's not that way. Yeah. I was thinking about interpreting the charge as symmetry.
Sure.
Sorry, the soft object.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so
that's but then, okay, but then you just, okay.
Okay, yeah, so I was just gonna conclude that People originally found these huge symmetry algebras from this soft perspective, but it's pretty. You have pretty long formulas when you deal with those, so it's good to know that it's actually equivalent to the double resident condition on either hard celestial or hard momentum. And furthermore, you don't even have to deal directly with endpoint momentum amplitudes if you want to know if the symmetry algebra is consistent. You can just look at four-point amplitudes, this simple property of four-point amplitudes.
Sorry, you haven't told us, when is it that it fails, Jacobi? For which k1, k2? Does it fail for leading, subleading already, or?
So it differs from theory to theory, but within a given theory you're going to have some finite set of universal soft theorems, and then like the commutators between those that keep you within the universal set are guaranteed to satisfy Jacobi.
So but for Yang means leading and subleading are okay, and then
So Yang Mills has a leading and subleading universal soft theorems. But if you took the commutator of two of the subleading ones, like just first subleading, so they are universal, that then their commutator involves the subleading one.
Yeah.
And that's actually where it first fails.
Okay. So, okay.
And if I don't take any supplement, I just go to 6-1, I have this 4-point amplitude, and then statement that the residues are defined is a statement that it can be, I think, to a collinear, and I think
figuring out whether your ostensible current algebra would satisfy Jacobi, it's just as simple as reading off one of the terms from writing your four-point amplitude with spinner helicity. That's my punchline for that. Yeah, Kevin?
So Natalie and I wrote this paper about one lock for Marie Angel's theory of motifs. There is the problematic amplitude is exactly like that, which is good. It's like the one loop, one minus amplitude. But on the other hand, we can show associativity is restored when there's certain matter.
Mm-hmm.
And there is still an amplitude like that.
Mm-hmm.
So are you sure?
Right.
Goes
yes, I think part of the difference for your case is that because from the loop you have 1/z² terms, whereas I used when you're collinear it's only 1/z.
Absolutely, yeah. It was all under the 1/z² terms. Gotcha. Okay. So you think? Do you know what the wrong thing? If it was a 1/z² term, what should I look for?
Yeah, to the extent that I've thought about it, it seems confusing. And I've talked to some other people at Harvard about it, and they also don't know of any like first principles way to fix it. The only suggestion I've heard is you treat it symmetrically, you put it in the middle, and then expand. Right, that was what you did.
So can you explain a bit more how are you reconciling the statement
with you? So if you look in like the old 1990s literature for like the one loop splitting function, there's a formula for it, and it involves 1/(n²). Whereas a tree lap involves 1/(n². And that the fact that there's a square in the formula is going to propagate through the analysis in some way and change the result.
Is that going to cure the associativity, you think, or is that the claim?
The associativity just failed, and it's very easy to see.
And sorry, the failure was really, even if you say the plus and ECP second, so it's not, it has nothing to do with the mixing of
ECP. It's totally separate from that.
Yeah. Now for gravity, I would expect that the subsubmeaning, doesn't fail.
Right.
From what I know from the commutator, it would fail later, but for your needs, expect subleading to fail. Mm-hmm. I would not expect subleading to fail for gravity.
Right. It takes a little longer to fail for gravity.
You need to go to spin. Okay, good.
Yeah.
So we are.
Right.
Okay, that's very good.
Right, so for this momentum space case, that the failure was just coming from this extra z star pole within the three particle factorization propagator. From the hard celestial perspective, you Mellon transform that, and the pole goes away, but it turns into a branch cut, which is still enough to mess up trying to pull your contour from one thing to another. And then for the soft case, it's about the order of soft and collinear limits.
It's interesting we can comment on that, is because the you can get the OP from the equations of motion, the assembly equations of motion, and you can check that up to spin 4, which would be k equal 3 or whatever, like up to k, you know, so the sub leading is still kind of universal, in fact, in gravity, whereas the sub leading in Hermes is not universal. There's no correction to the gravity equations of motion compared to Salvia equations of motion, for instance. It sounds a bit creepy.
Yeah. Let's talk about that more.
Sorry, but that's okay. Then what's the lesson? I'm going to the to what Sabrina was saying. So it means we're missing some operators, right? The CFT, is not. I mean, as we haven't identified the right. I mean, we need to include more observable, right?
Perhaps.
The one you find CFT when the period is so unthinkable. It's like a special feature, like Young symmetry.
No.
Okay.
So there's two options. It sounds like this obstruction looks like this L infinity structure. That is, you know, you have something and you have an obstruction, and then you need to introduce some kind of operator. So is it possible that, in fact, I don't know, maybe it's not a usual CFT, but there's some notion of universal CFT that completes some L infinity
factor? You see what I'm talking about? I
think people talk about this notion of universal. What is the right term? Universal CFT? Where you add the right operators? You can hear the more special thing.
Yeah, yeah. We did something like that. Sometimes that works. You add one extra field and then some exchange of that extra field cancels this problem.
Yeah.
Do you need a kind of
It does look like a UCL 3.3. I mean, it looks like an infinity structure in the sense that you try to have a local algebra, it doesn't work, and then you have a triple product, right? Which is this, and then right. It sounds like there's a. I mean, okay, it sounds more like a string field or an infinity structure, right?
Yeah,
So maybe, infinity, some kind of generalization of the algebra. You have a two product, a three product, a four product, but you have some kind of generalization of Jacobi and closeness.
I was going to ask, is it the higher order for, like, when you go past reading and sub-reading, is that what breaks the Jacobian energy? Is that?
Yeah.
Like, is it?
No, but partially some of that, like, you need to, sorry, if you go beyond the leading software, you need to have your moment vertical operators and your story tied to computation relations work out. So I don't think it's really just the, like, I think it's tied to the missing multivertical states, is what I'm saying.
Well, these are two things. I'm talking about the algebraic filter, he's talking about the
computation. Because
I'm talking about sub-reading, etc., work exactly the corrections of the higher functions. Yeah, I think this, I would conjecture that there's something. Yes, the correction, as we say, in gravity, the sub-reading is okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's only later that it comes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you meant.
Yeah.
yeah, basically just saying like the higher the n bracket maybe corresponds to like whatever sub book with, you know, the word sub and like this.
Whatever.
Yeah. Because like, if you have an L algebra, you can build a Lie algebra from it, like in cohomology. Like, this is just nonsense.
This was just starting from amplitudes with being agnostic about the CFT for parts of this analysis, and it just fails.
Right, it's just like, you know, you have an amplitude, it's a function, look at its behavior, and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Okay, but say we screw the amplitude and we say we're looking at boundary correlators in our bulk theory. The question of do we have an OPE or do we have like associativity of operators near the boundary in that theory?
Yeah, that sounds great. All this theory, any quantum field theory, any boundary condition. That's
great. So, and then all we're doing in this story is with software is dimensionally reducing the boundaries. And I mean, we can't do that, but either way, like, I just want to hold on to
some. Is a kind of local when you the lines.
No, but they're local. I mean, at least you can tell them not operators. They should be like, relevant, almost local, because they tell you start having like these global multiple operators. They're all in different directions in this cluster sphere. So they're going to be sense of separated.
I think it's all like a good discussion for Thursday. I mean, there's, anyway, there's maybe.
Like, can we?
You need to add to your OPE a new operator that corresponds to and then see whether you can make an associative algebra. And maybe it's always possible in some way.
Take a 40 CFT.
What?
Take a 40 CFT, put it on a paper surface, write all the primaries that are normal derivatives as other primaries, and then dimension reduce that, or don't dimension reduce it, and now you have the 3D. You should have closure of that.
Yeah, but the question is where is
it? But you know, especially when you go through, you know all the vertical operators. They're not, it's not.
Okay, but the question is to identify them.
Yeah.
And they have to be. And I think they have to be in line with this distortion.
But I think it has to be like in the mean field theory, it should be in line with literally just all of the local operators you can write down in terms of operator like the operator product extension of just the 340 CFT for two operators in an all paper surface. You have a bunch of multivertical operators there. Those are obviously missing in this work with Schumann.
Yeah.
But like that's right, we have like the Hilbert cluster generating it with just single vertical operators. So I think it's clear that there should be more operators in the spectrum, and this is the same way that even if I was talking about like a box space, I don't have just the same purple space, I have like the n purple space.
Yeah, but you see, it's not any n particle space, it's the one associated with the violation of Jacobi. So this.
No, but you know you need those, and then you take the.
So,
do you expect that the OPE for two positive Hilbert gluons should have more blocks within it?
Yeah. Like, I think if I just take two gluons, so if I take two gluon fields and I'm doing like two gluons on a light sheet near each other, it should be an AA term.
Right, but if I just take an amplitude and I take two of the gluons close together, then you just read off from the collinear limit that it's what's already been written down, right? There's just.
But like, for instance, when you do the, like, I think if there's something to be careful about whether the state is the vector that you're acting, because like the anic operators, like these operators like one,
might be zero, normally there's no difference there, but like as an operator, this is kind of like small vertical balances that are for like talking about quantum physics and easier for. And those should all be there. Well, you said there's two scoops.
You know, and some might be like, oh yeah, it's something. And that makes a flat limit story where we just literally go down from lambda to make a curl.
Thanks.